So one of the people I studied when I was doing my dissertation was Henry Wieman. He was a self-proclaimed philosopher, and he was a professor at many universities. He was also a member of a Unitarian Universalist church, though he never really claimed himself as a UU. And he created the theory of creative interchange. And he believed that there was this spark of creativity that existed in between people, and that when two people actually acknowledged each other in serious dialogue and appreciation of each other, something new was created that neither one could have created before. And he likened this, he never called it God, but he wrote very theologically about this creative instant and used all the other words besides God to describe it. But I always thought that for an agnostic or an atheist, that was a concept that something could be created out of nothing when two people come together in relationship, fully appreciating each other. And it's what I like to think of right relationship. Right relationship is when neither person has power over the other, neither person is more right or more wrong, and that the exchange that they experience actually creates something magical. Something that gives them both a sort of aha moment or a sense of deep, intimate connection, something that neither one could have created or experienced on their own. I had one of those recently. I think I've mentioned my brother David before from this pulpit. David is the conservative evangelical Christian person who's been my brother for 65 years. And David was 5 years old when I was born, which immediately put me on the short end of the stick because he was not happy that I arrived. And I think it's actually taken us about 50 plus years to move through that. Well, the other day he called me and I looked on his phone and I immediately went, oh God, something's wrong, because David never calls me unless it's my birthday or Christmas. And so there's David. And he said, hi, sis. I just wanted to call you because I was just listening to my favorite talk show host, Rush Limbaugh, and he said, you should never miss an opportunity to call the people you love. Wow. I said, and then he said, I love you, sis. And I said, I love you too. And it was extremely sincere on both our parts. And there was one of those moments, you know, those warm, fuzzy, you feel it in your chest and in your belly. And then there's just a moment of silence. And he said, took us a while, didn't it? And I said, it absolutely did. And we both chuckled. And then we talked about everything that we can talk about, the weather, my sister-in-law, the kids. And, you know, it was great. And we've learned to avoid those other topics. Every once in a while, he'll get close and he'll try to hook me and he'll say something about taxes or right to life or, you know, something. We both had to be very intentional because we experienced a moment. My mother had had a stroke and we had to decide together what to do, how to respond, how to care for her. And it was in that moment, and we never really talked about it directly, but this was 2008. And up to this point, we'd tolerated each other, but I wouldn't say we ever had those warm, fuzzy moments. And he knew just how to hook me, and I knew just how to inflame him right back. And we would always end up in arguments. So when we needed to cooperate around my mom's care, we sort of laid everything aside. And there was this moment, we moved my mom into assisted living, and we were working real hard. We'd moved all this stuff, and there was this gigantic chair. I don't know if many of you know these chairs that lift you up. You know, if you're arthritic or have mobility challenges, you can get a chair that actually lifts you from sitting to standing. And they are very, very heavy, very heavy. So my brother and I are struggling with this chair, and we're trying to get the chair from the van to this room, and we have to stop every 3 minutes to rest. and we finally get the chair into my mother's apartment, and I sit down on the chair, and we hear, "That was easy." And I was like, "What on earth?" And I pulled out of the chair one of those Staples little things. I had given it to my mother about a month ago, right after she'd had her stroke, when she was practicing things. I said, "When you get frustrated, just hit the button, and it'll tell you, that was easy." Well, my brother and I just cracked up. I think it's the hardest we have ever laughed in our entire lives. Like, that was anything but easy. And right then and there, we decided that we would do our best to practice being responsible in our relationship in the hopes, and we didn't exactly use these words because I'm sure his words would have been very different, but to be intentional about getting to that place where we could be in right relationship. And we have faltered, we have made mistakes, we have practiced. And I think that's the most important thing always to remember. If you want to arrive at that experience of right relationship, where you can have that exchange through differences, but have an experience of something new being ignited or created, you have to practice. You have to practice relational responsibility until you can get to that place of right relationship. And relational responsibility is built upon the belief that there is something better than being right. There is something better than being in charge. There is something better than being on your own. You have to value the relationship as much as you value yourself. And I hadn't thought of it before I listened to Zero, but you have to actually love yourself enough to be vulnerable, to risk the challenges, the confrontations, the accusations, the being wrong, before you can actually be in right relationship. And what my brother and I discovered was that we grew up in a culture where it wasn't necessarily important to be right, but what was very dangerous was to be wrong. Because we had this Eastern European culture where if you were wrong, you were attacked and sort of everybody piled up on top of you to tell you why you were wrong. There really was no value. If you were right, nobody ever noticed. But when you were wrong or you made a mistake, that was the place where you had to be corrected, you had to be challenged. So we learned to avoid being wrong at any cost. What you think about is a little bit different than asserting yourself as being right. Because what it does is it teaches you to hide just a little bit of yourself, to put that part of yourself that you're not quite sure about in the closet so that no one can judge you or notice that you're wrong. So that was a huge piece of our practicing. I started working on this probably 2008, 2009, and what it taught me was how important my work on my dissertation was, because that was all about right relationship and relational responsibility. And I had sort of separated the personal from the academic until my supervisor for my dissertation asked me when I was complaining about something about my brother and that this was the last place I would practice right relationship. This was before 2008. She said, "Do you want to be right? Or do you want to be in relationship?" And I've asked you that question before. And it's a really important moment. And of course, I said, "I'm not trying to be right. I'm just rah, 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 rah." And she just laughed, but she nailed it. I really didn't want to discover something new about my brother. I really didn't want to go to that vulnerable place of exposing something of myself that he might pick at or judge or value less. So what she taught me was that we each have a multitude of voices in us. We have many of us a mother voice, a father voice, a sister voice, a brother voice. We have a professional voice. We have a neighbor voice. We have a child voice. We have a victim voice. We have a dominant voice. They all exist within us. They're parts of our personality. What being relationally responsible is knowing the voices within you enough and being self-aware enough and confident enough that you choose the voice that will be most helpful in the moment. So what I learned was that my progressive, educated, liberal voice was the last voice that was effective with my brother. The voice that was effective with my brother was little sister, vulnerable little sister, who didn't try to judge him, who worshiped him. And so that would be the voice I would go to in my conversations with him. I let go of those other identities I so wanted him to recognize and affirm, because that was about me. That was me looking for his respect, his validation. And when we're in a relationship that's uneven like that, and we're looking for something, it's very hard to be relationally responsible. It's very hard to be intentional about being in right relationship. So you have to let go of expectations. You have to take the person for who they are. If I would go into a phone call with my brother expecting him to hear me, expecting him to like me, respect me, appreciate me, I was doomed. Because the first thing that would happen is I'd be disappointed. I'd only be looking for what I wanted to hear and only know I'd not gotten what I wanted. So the first thing I learned was let go of expectations. What's that great? Expect nothing and never be disappointed. It's important if you want to be in right relationship. And from there, I could actually hear him and appreciate him. And then he got a little suspicious when I stopped pushing my agenda. And he actually said, "You've changed." I said, "Really?" He said, "You've turned into an ambassador." And I actually thought that was a pretty good thing to become. Recently, some of you may have heard about the punching in Seattle. How many have heard the punching story? There was a man who was wearing a Nazi armband and got in an altercation with people who confronted him. And one of the people that confronted him punched him right in the nose. And KUOW hosted a conversation. Do we ever have the right to hit someone, even if it's someone we disagree with? Do we have that right to hold someone accountable or to get into a violent confrontation? There was a lot of different opinions expressed. I missed the conversation where the person who got punched actually called in and wanted to participate in the conversation, would not identify himself, only identified himself as the person who had gotten punched. No name, no other context. And so Bill Radke interviewed him. There was a huge uproar from the public radio community, insulted, hurt, demanding that he apologize, telling him how he offended and violated people by having a Nazi. Did he think of the people who were Jewish, the Jewish High Holy Days? Did he think of the people who are hated and violated by Nazis, by white supremacists and all the hate groups? Did he think about the people whose lives are in danger because of people like that? And he actually made an apology on the radio. Did anybody hear that? It was amazing. It was amazing because he hit all of the right relational notes. He did not defend himself. He did not justify his actions. He did not judge anyone else for holding him accountable. And he took responsibility for his actions. He gave a clear, sincere, simple apology. "I am so sorry. What I did was wrong. I hurt you. I broke trust. I was wrong. And those are the fundamental elements of apology. Do not justify, defend, explain your actions. Don't try to say, well, I really meant to, or I didn't intend, or any of those pieces. Just own that you offended someone. It was so powerful. And then he backed it up by inviting other journalists on a panel to talk with him about what he'd done and publicly tell him what he did that was wrong on the radio. How vulnerable is that? I was amazed at what he modeled in terms of relational responsibility and right relationship. He has to be a very, very confident human being. He has to know exactly who he is and be sure in his own identity to be able to be that vulnerable. If we have any insecurities about who we are, our goodness, our worth, that's when we slip, I think. Because that's when we're vulnerable to trying to make ourselves okay in the other's eyes. We have to be totally okay in our own eyes before we can be vulnerable enough to offer that sort of clear apology and ownership of our responsibility. Years ago, I was in a spiritual support group, and it was with three other ministers. And one of the ministers was a dear, dear friend. And we were having this conversation about, and I don't even remember what the context, every week we would pick a different topic. And we'd meet for 2 hours on Tuesdays and we'd discuss something about spiritual maturity and development. And Nancy looked at me and she said, Elaine, I can't always trust you because you're not always honest. And I was like, oh my God, how can I? And I prided myself in my honesty and my sincerity. And through the two-hour conversation, what we got to was that you can only be as honest as you are self-aware. If there are pieces of your personality, your communication styles, your culture, something that is unconscious and not in the forefront of your toolkit, if you don't know that you have all those voices in you, a dominant voice, a victim voice, all those pieces, then you are liable to step into something unaware of the injury you could cause, or your lack of awareness could make you dishonest because you present yourself as something other than you are. Through that conversation, and because of my trust in Nancy and the other people in that group, we went into a whole year of uncovering, is there anything in us that we do not know about? And practicing love. Whatever dysfunction, neuroses, twerk, whatever that we had, we practicing, I love you just the way you are. I love me just the way I am. And that is the foundation to right relationship. So when we say here we are going to practice love, it's self-love as well as love for others. When we say we're going to build community, we are choosing to put ourselves out there in a vulnerable way, and we need to be open, like the zero. We have to be open to people giving us feedback about who we are and how we're perceived. And to not judge that person or tell them they're wrong, but to hear what they say and say, thank you. Thank you. I didn't realize I sounded like that. There is never an end to the learning. Do I know myself thoroughly yet? No. I can still hear things from you and say, wow, I did not realize I sounded like that. And I so appreciate your direct feedback. I so appreciate when someone comes to me and says something about what I said or behaved or that teaches me something new about a voice I have, and a voice that I can use effectively or not. We all have something to learn here. We all have good pieces to share. We all have intentions that we want to bring to the world. And we're all here learning how best to do that, how to effectively be in relationship with each other and beyond. So I invite you to come and listen to the magic of Lee Moonwa. He is a master at right relationship. You will learn something that will inspire your relationships with your family. Thanksgiving is coming up. And will inspire your relationship with your neighbors, with your partner, with your children, with your siblings. Is there any relationship you have that cannot grow in depth and meaning? If you're there, you do not have to come October 14th. But if there's something in you that wants to be in deeper, more intimate relationship with another, then do not miss this opportunity. The joy in your life can expand. The circle of relationships that you can enjoy can expand. And you can learn that there are no others. There are only we's. And when we learn to transcend that I to become a we, it is a blessing. I want to leave you with these words from Henry Nouwen, who is an Episcopal bishop. He says, in a world full of strangers, estranged from their own past, culture, country, from neighbors, friends, family, from maybe their deepest self or their God, we witness all around us a painful search for a hospitable place where life can be lived without fear and where real community can be found. Although many, we might even say most strangers in this world become easily the victim of fear and hostility, it is possible for us to offer an open and hospitable place where strangers can cast off their strangeness and become our fellow human beings. We have to be intentional if we want to move from hostility to hospitality. This is our vocation, our only vocation, to convert the hostis into hospice, the enemy into guest, and to create the free and fearless space where brotherhood and sisterhood can be formed and fully experienced. With that in mind, I invite you to join me in a moment of silence and prayer.